Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, I am Kimberly Adams. Welcome to Make Me Smart, where none of us is as smart as all of us.
I'm Kyle Risdahl. It's a Tuesday, and what we do on Tuesdays, for those of you who are new, is we take a single topic and devote the first, like 15 minutes of the podcast to that with somebody who really knows what they're talking about, and Kimberly and I asking really good questions, so we all get a little smarter. And today, we're going to talk about crypto, because, wow, have you seen what's going on in crypto? Bitcoin to Ethereum and Coinbase and everything. Hundreds of billions of dollars have vaporized, and that's real money, by the way. And that's why we're going to talk about this.
Yeah, and we should say, like, not all of this has happened overnight, but part of this downturn really just accelerated last week. And it's having real effects, especially for people who maybe jumped into crypto during the last 2 years of the pandemic and, you know, had a little bit of FOMO and were really excited about getting into this big new thing. And now those people are losing a lot of money, and it's really affecting a lot of folks.
So we have gotten an actual expert on the line. Her name is Anita Ramaswamy. She's in crypto, and she's a crypto and finance tech reporter at TechCrunch. Anita, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
All right. So look, as Kimberly said, this is not all happening instantaneously. It's been a while that crypto's been a little janky, but it does seem in the last week that things have kind of fallen off the table. And how come?
Yeah, so there are a lot of factors that have kind of led up to this, but really the magnitude of this is pretty huge. I mean, crypto was worth almost $2 trillion as an industry coming into around 2 weeks ago, and now it's a lot closer to $1 trillion or $1.1 trillion. So that is a lot of value that's been lost, and I think it's coming sort of in conjunction with a broader sell-off in tech stocks and the market in general. So there are a lot of economic factors that I think have led to, you know, stocks in general falling, but I think crypto specifically being a risky and volatile asset, the market is really showing that, you know, this is something that when the broader markets go down, crypto is going to go down too.
Was there something in particular? Well, obviously there probably was. Like, what do we know about what triggered this particular crash right now?
Yeah, so I would say there's sort of two categories. And the first is just broader economic factors. We're still very much experiencing the aftermath of the pandemic. And it's not just aftermath, you know, we're still in it in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, companies in general, their costs have gone up, right? So we have these supply chain issues, we have some geopolitical instability going on. We have mismatch between supply and demand in a lot of industries. And that's across the board. That's not just with crypto, but I think that's why we're seeing a broader sort of market downturn. But when it comes to crypto specific factors, not only are all of those issues, but I think there are sort of, you know, maybe two categories of problems that are going on. And the first is that trading volumes are down. So people are not really, wanting to speculate, and they don't want to take risk because there's a lot of fear around some of those economic issues. You know, another one of those is like interest rates going up after a really long time. But the second more crypto specific issue is exemplified by what happened with the stable coin called UST, run by Terraform Labs. And that stablecoin, while it wasn't a huge part of discussion, you know, outside of the crypto community before, really drew a lot of attention because of losing its price peg to the US dollar. So it's called a stablecoin. It's supposed to be stable, and its price just absolutely plummeted last week. And people are talking about that.
Yeah. So before we get into the really, really nitty gritty of stablecoins, which just fascinate me, particularly algorithmic stablecoins, right? Help me understand why, if I don't have anything in crypto, money-wise, why is this important?
Yeah, I think it's important because this year, a lot of people who hadn't invested in anything before joined the market, and they specifically invested in crypto. If you look at sort of the statistics of who these investors are, like a lot of, you know, just average people saw promise in this industry and saw a lot of hope and started, you know, buying up these assets because they thought it was a get rich quick sort of scheme or a way to make easy money. And at the end of the day, I think this is really important because it's not just limited to crypto. I mean, it's such a huge part of our financial system now, and it's not going away. So even if you don't particularly hold crypto, I think it'll have some broader economic effects. And it'll also be interesting to see what it means for, you know, retail investors, for the average person who's just investing their funds in different assets. You know, what happens in the crypto industry because it's so new and it's so unregulated. I mean, we have new technologies pop up like that all the time.
I mean, and I also want to get into sort of the nitty-gritty of what went down last week. But, you know, when we're talking about these people who jumped into crypto in the last, like, year or two, yeah, there was, like, this get-rich-quick element. But we shouldn't ignore the fact that there were celebrities and athletes and a lot of people in finance and on CNBC, like, and all these other financial news sources saying, like, this is a real thing that you should get into. I mean, what is your take on that and how people were being sort of pumped up for it?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of excitement and exuberance and a lot of companies making really big promises that they ultimately couldn't keep. And I do think that the underlying technology, the blockchain, is valid. And there are a lot of use cases for the blockchain that could actually really help society and help average people. But a lot of the value and a lot of the money that's flowed into the industry recently has just been, you know, to these projects that they're super hard to understand. And it's kind of, you know, almost separate from the reality of people's everyday lives. And I think a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of excitement, but not a lot of education about the risks. So if you look at some survey data, just showing the risk tolerance of people who got into Bitcoin, who got into Ethereum, who started buying crypto last year, a lot of them have a lot higher of a risk tolerance. But at the end of the day now, I mean, what you're seeing is a lot of fear. And so the second that these cryptocurrencies started falling, people are getting scared and they're realizing what that risk actually means. And I think when you heard a lot of these celebrities, you know, talking about their projects, all they talked about was the promise of crypto as a whole, but they didn't really talk about, you know, what can happen in the meantime. There's always the risk that this can go to zero. Right. It's not regulated.
Right. And the thing about it is that everything was hunky-dory with crypto, give or take, until all of a sudden it wasn't, which gets us to stablecoins and Terra and Luna and algorithmic stablecoins. So just to set the stage here, a stablecoin is a coin that is supposed to be stable because it is backed one-to-one by U.S. dollar assets, right? The algorithmic stablecoin, which is, I think, what really focused people's minds last week, the algorithmic stablecoin combo of Terra and Luna went haywire. In as layman's terms as possible, because this gets weedy in a hurry, but in as layman's terms as possible, what happened and why?
Right. So a stablecoin can back any currency, but in this case, Terra was supposed to, one UST, which is the Terra currency, one UST was supposed to equal one USD, one US dollar. And that link got broken. And the reason behind that is that UST doesn't have reserves in the traditional sense. So like when you think about, you know, when the US dollar used to be backed by bars of gold, right? That was a reserve system. And it works similarly to what a stablecoin is supposed to do. So there's a type of stablecoin where you have a cryptocurrency, it's supposed to back the US dollar, and there's actually like a vault of US dollars sitting somewhere physically, so you know that that peg is going to hold. But in the case of Terra, because it's an algorithmic stablecoin, it was using a much more complicated backend system where it involved, you know, buying up other cryptocurrencies. And there wasn't actually a physical reserve of US dollars to back it. So that link ended up getting broken because of some of the volatility with other cryptocurrencies. And therefore, one UST didn't equal one USD anymore. In fact, one UST was trading as low as like 9 cents on the dollar at some points this week.
Wow.
Was there something in particular that started this sort of spiral of it heading down?
Yeah, it was basically sell-offs from another decentralized finance project. So one of the other cryptocurrencies that was backing Terra experienced a sell-off, and it was just sort of a small thing. Like it wasn't something that you would expect to completely destabilize the entire crypto industry. And, you know, Terra itself, it's like the third largest stablecoin, but even stablecoins are sort of, or it was the third largest, even stablecoins are just a niche in crypto at this point. So I think it was just one of those things where something really small and unexpected sort of went wrong. And then it triggered this sort of domino effect.
When you're out about talking to people and you say you cover crypto, do they generally understand what you're talking about? Or are they like, man, what is that? It's like hocus pocus magic. I don't even know.
No, it's super confusing. And honestly, even for me, like I have a finance background and I feel like I learn something new every single day. I mean, this industry, it's moving so quickly. But I think the one thing it has in common with finance is that a lot of the concepts are things that we're familiar with and aren't actually that complicated, but there's a lot of jargon to describe them. So I think like crypto as an industry has just created, like done all this gatekeeping and created all these fancy terms. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it's not that impressive. Yeah.
Terra is just another cryptocurrency at the end of the day, and there have been other stable coins that failed in the past. So why was this one in particular so significant that it really just caused all of these downstream effects in the rest of the crypto industry?
I think it was just the moment and the timing. Like with the broader markets being down, people were already getting scared. You know, I think investors were starting to become fearful. And at this point, you know, crypto has grown so much in the past year, and it's been unsustainably fast. Like, I think a crash in prices was coming at some point, and it was sort of inevitable. And this just happened to be the thing that came along to really make people fearful. And, you know, once that sell-off starts, I think it continues and it's going to keep going. I think the other reason that it's particularly important is because of what regulators have said about it. So Janet Yellen came out last week and she was talking about the UST situation. And she said, like, we need to regulate stable coins. And I think especially in the US, there's just not been a lot of clarity on regulation. And I think now law enforcement and, you know, the government really want to start cracking down on this industry.
You know, it's funny, though. I mean, Bitcoin's been around since what, like 2009? And for those who were in the know, stable coins and tokens and all of that have been around for a number of years. So there's a little piece of me that's like, hello, regulators, where you been?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think it's just, it's such a confusing industry that like regulators might not even know where to start or exactly how to regulate. I think everyone agrees that regulation is needed, but like what to do is a bigger question.
Right.
Yeah. And what even to regulate? Because they were just getting around to regulating like Bitcoin and stuff, and now they're like, oh gosh, we have to look at stable coins. What's happening to all these people, especially these retail investors who are losing everything?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have lost a lot of money, and I think that's where it comes down to, like, there hasn't been a lot of education, and there's definitely not been adequate education around this. Because if you were to invest in crypto, I mean, the expert advice is that you shouldn't have more than like 5% of your investments in crypto because it's super risky and it's super volatile. But a lot of the messaging from these companies ended up being that, you know, buy Bitcoin, it's a hedge against inflation. Like if inflation goes up, Bitcoin's going to be stable. And none of that really turned out to be true. So unfortunately, a lot of investors made, like retail investors, average people made much bigger bets than they maybe should have. And I think in the long run, a lot of them might be okay, especially if they're holding, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum that have been around for years and years and have been volatile for years and years too. But, you know, in the short term, if people get scared and they start selling off and then they lock in those losses, it's going to be really bad. And it's unfortunate.
How far back, just as a way to wrap this up, or actually, let me rephrase the question, not how far back, but do you think this week's, last week's sort of crisis in crypto, but more specifically, the realization that it's a little bit of a house of cards, crypto is.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that sets back its inevitable march toward actually becoming usable money, right? Because it will get there. The question is when.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I think that all of the volatility is just really difficult. If you're trying to build a product for the long term, you need things like stable coins, right? I mean, there's so many different reasons why stable coins are useful, but they actually have to work. And I think that's where, you know, people are, I think it's a good thing that people are going to start questioning the technology behind the industry now. I think a lot of times it's like, let's trust the engineers, let's trust the people who built this, and, you know, it's all going to work out. But right now, those claims really need to be pushed back on a little bit more. I think it absolutely will slow the growth of crypto, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Anita Ramaswamy, she's a crypto and fintech reporter at TechCrunch, making us all smart on crypto and stablecoins and all that. Anita, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you take your paycheck in crypto? That's my question to everybody. Whenever they say, hey, what about crypto? I'm like, would you take your paycheck in it?
And some people would. There was a pretty vigorous discussion on the fan-run Discord today about, like, whether the media in particular are doing a good enough job or have done a good enough job warning people about the downside risks of crypto in the coverage. And, you know, like, it's been a hard thing to cover because I remember our early discussions about it were like, should we even give this attention because it looks like a house of cards? And then it's like, well, we can't ignore it because it's showing up everywhere and it's a huge segment of the market now. But at the same time, how do you explain it in a way that helps people understand without, like, getting folks to jump on a bandwagon of something they don't fully understand?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's a huge challenge. I think it's a huge challenge.
Okay, well, let us know what you thought of this conversation, what surprised you, if anything, or what you think is missing from the conversation. Our number is 508-827-6278, also known as 508-UBSMART, or send us a voice memo at makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we will be right back. News fixes. Yes.
Yes. I think we've got our at least two of ours kind of line up. So why don't you do your first one, then I'll do my first one, and then because they are of a pair, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's this great piece in Vox that asks a really fundamental question that I think a lot of people are asking right now. What is the point of crypto? And sort of the subtitle of it in this piece by Emily Stewart, crypto is a solution in search of a problem or problems, with this idea that what you said earlier, a lot of the promises, or what Anita was saying earlier, a lot of the early promises of crypto just have not come true. And so you have this technology that now we're like, okay, well, if it's not exactly great as this financial instrument for retail investors, what is it good for? And is it just only to live in the domain of, like, the super techie, you know, people with advanced mathematics degrees to use amongst themselves, or for criminals to use to move money internationally across borders? And it's a really good look, and also another one of these nice just explainers of how things work and a sense of the scale of where we are with this. So yeah. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and also Emily Stewart's really good, just as a plug for her. Okay, so mine is news that came out this morning from Coinbase, which is, if not the granddaddy of crypto exchanges, then it's certainly one of the first and biggest movers in that space. It said today, in light of the drubbing that crypto's been on the last number of weeks, here's the quote from them this morning. Given current market conditions, we feel it's prudent to slow hiring and reassess our headcount needs against our highest priority business goals. So this is a real world implication of this magic money kind of evaporating in value, right? People are not going to get jobs. It is possible that people are going to lose jobs, right? Reassess headcount needs is not very, you know, tricky code for, maybe there are going to be layoffs. You know, Coinbase shares are down 74% year to date amid, you know, the decline in Bitcoin and all the other prices because people are getting out and they're losing money, Coinbase as a business. And I think it's a real world implication of this mythical thing that crypto has become. And we should just all be ready for that. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. I still feel really bad for the people who maybe were convinced by names and faces that they trust to get into something that they maybe didn't understand.
Here's my all-time, sorry to interrupt. Here is my all-time favorite history comes back to bite you in the butt repeatedly thing. So you remember those ads with Matt Damon that aired during the Super Bowl, him touting crypto and this and that? Fortune favors the brave. Okay. Mm. Fortune favors the brave was said in history by Pliny the Elder as he sailed toward Pompeii to investigate Mount Vesuvius. Pliny the Elder dies after saying fortune favors the brave. I would just like everybody to understand history. Isn't that great?
I love
that. I love that. Anyway.
OK. cake.
Sorry, was that a little geeky? Is that a little too much?
No, I mean, it's great. It's all great. You know, love a little ancient history thrown in
right.
with the, you know, we like it old and we like it new.
That's right.
You know, something
right.
borrowed, something blue, et cetera, et cetera. My other story yes. is just a really quick one that Today, the FDA announced that they are going to expand booster eligibility for 5 to 11-year-olds, which I know a lot of folks mm-hmm. are happy about because the pandemic is not over.
No.
And no. and that's specifically for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine booster. And we still don't have a booster for itty-bitty kids yet, or a vaccine
a shot.
For
yeah.
little kids. So I was talking to a friend of mine who wants to come to visit D.C., but they're trying really hard to wait until they can get their baby vaccinated before they get on a plane, and it's hard.
Oh, it's got to be brutal. I can't imagine, actually. But just the stress, in addition to regular raising a child stress. Item number two for me, it's a quickie. I just want to point out that a lot of producers in the oil and gas world, Chevron among them, are predicting that once Europe gets all the way out of its Russian oil and natural gas contracts, they're never going back and Russia is going to be permanently isolated. And I think that would be a fascinating and interesting geopolitical development. Because once that huge producer of oil and gas gets isolated, then what do we do? Oh, Kai says, we'll shift to renewables because that's what a market force is going to do. Well, we'll see. I don't know. Anyway, just a little tidbit from the Financial Times there. Anyway. All right, let's do the mailbag.
Hi, Kai and Kimberly.
This is Godfrey from San Francisco.
Jesse from Charleston, South Carolina.
And I have a follow-up question.
It has me thinking and feeling a lot of things.
I love that, thinking and feeling a lot of things. First up, a tweet from Make Me Smart listener Audie Norman, who is an artist and just created some really fun Make Me Smart fan art that makes us look like superheroes, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Cool.
Obviously, you can't see it on a podcast, but we are going to have it on our show page. But just for a description, we both have capes. We both have pretty cool weapons.
You've got Thor's hammer. That's the weapon.
I do. Yeah. And we've got like armor and
it's cool.
We're looking very superhero-ish, if I may say so myself.
We've
got Greaves on our legs and everything. Yes,
yeah.
I have played enough games to know that those are called Greaves.
Yeah. What are Greaves? What are those? For real.
Wait,
that's a question.
Are the Greaves on the arms or on the legs?
I don't know.
I think
Somebody's gonna know. Somebody's gonna know.
Yeah.
One of our listeners will know what
it's called. Greaves.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll put that on the show page. It's fun stuff. We are, as you know, in the middle of fundraising. All sorts of gifts are yours for the offering, including the Jasper Tumbler named after Kimberly's cat, who, by the way, we heard his bells yesterday. Did you hear that? I did. I heard the bells. It was great. Here's another fundraising idea. Let us know what you think about this one.
Hi, Kai and Kimberly. This is Jody calling from Las Vegas. I know you probably already have all your gifts planned out for your fundraising efforts, but I did have one suggestion in light of Kimberly's love of cocktails and bitters. I think if you could make a line of custom bitters called Kimberly's Not So Bitter, that would be a fun
oh,
idea.
Oh, snap.
Thanks for making us smart. Bye.
That'd be great.
Oh, but I am bitter so often.
That's a
bitter
whole different
petty.
Podcast. That is a whole different podcast. Good suggestion, though, Jody. Good suggestion.
Yeah, maybe the line of it's like, Kimberly's not so bitter. Kimberly is bitter.
Yeah.
Kimberly is petty.
Kimberly's actual bitters. All right, we're going to go. We're going to leave you with this week's answer to the Make Me Smart question, which is, once again, what is something you thought you knew but later found out you were wrong about?
This week's answer comes from Patrick McCray. He teaches histories of technology and science at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And I interviewed him recently on Marketplace Tech about the evolution of the technology behind the iPod. And so here was his answer to the Make Me Smart question, which I love because it had really little to do with tech.
So I used to do a lot of rock climbing, and whenever I would be driving all throughout the West, I'd see these guys standing in the river waving sticks at the water, and I would think, that is just the dumbest thing possible. But once my partner moved to Colorado about 7 years ago, I took up fly fishing, and especially during COVID, it's been a really wonderful way of getting outside and just kind of relaxing. And it's much more fun than it looks.
Fly fishing. He said, he was like, yeah, I used to think fly fishing was really dumb.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes you just need like a moment of zen, man. And that's what fly fishing, I gather. I've never done it, but I gather that's what it gets you, which is, you know, whatever works for you, right? Whatever works for you. Do us a favor, keep sending us your answers via voice memo to our email, makemesmart@marketplace.org. makemesmart@marketplace.org is what that is. Sorry, I have no water in the studio. Or you can leave us a message, 508-827-6278, which is, of course, 508-UB-SMART.
Make Me Smart is directed and produced by Marissa Cabrera. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter, and our intern is Tiffany Bowie.
Today's program was engineered by Jake Cherry. Mingxin Qiguan is going to mix it down later. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. The senior producer is Bridget Bonner. Donna Tam is the director of On Demand Marketplace's vice president, and general manager is Neil Scarborough. And there you have it. Tuesday in the books. Everybody take the rest of the day off. How about that? No?
I wish. I gotta get on a plane today.
Oh, no. Going somewhere fun?
St. Louis.
Well, that's fun. You know.
Yeah.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.